There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Kia ora and welcome to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast. I am your host, Jordan. I am mum to two beautiful little boys, Jai and Ali. I also host the Your Birth Project online hypnobirthing course and the Mini Kiwis First Aid course for parents of under 5-year-olds. And I have an online store attached to Your Birth Project, which encompasses everything pregnancy, birth, and postpartum related. So just absolutely love that side of the business. I'm also a very, very passionate storyteller and a lover of all things birth. So hence why I am leading you on this podcast. I'm not an advocate for any particular type of birth or model of birth care. I am simply here to hold space for this platform for you to share your beautiful stories with us all. You'll hear stories of joy, of heartbreak, of love, of loss, and each family has a different experience to share. I'm trying to bring to light stories that we often only tell in the darkest of places or to our closest of friends, but really are so important for everybody to hear. So I hope that you love the podcast of these beautiful families all over Aotearoa, and I will let you jump into the podcast now. Enjoy. This week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales is very proudly brought to you by Edwards & Co. Edwards & Co are a Kiwi owned and operated family business, and they sell an incredible range of baby gear. We actually have their Otto and their Oscar G3 stroller, so their older model of the Oscar. They now have a new release, which is the Oscar MX, and it's an all-terrain three-wheel buggy with a reverse seat and plenty more really cool features. They also have a range of really incredible baby sleep products, and they are just launching today, which is very exciting, accessories to go along with their line. So they've got a really beautiful premium pram caddy, a picnic blanket, and a stroller blanket for those colder months. So I just think that Edwards & Co are the most amazing company. I have worked with them a lot in the past, and I cannot recommend their products enough. Just such a huge fan of Mark and Christian and Emily and the whole team there. So just, yeah, really love everything Edwards & Co. So super grateful that they were willing to sponsor this week's episode of the podcast, and you can find them at Edwards & Co Baby or by doing a quick internet search, edwardsandco.nz. Thanks so much for sponsoring this week's episode of the podcast, team. I absolutely love you all, and yeah, super grateful, Edwards & Co. In this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales, I speak with Zazie, and you may know her from @ZaziePlays on Instagram. We talk through her pregnancy and birth experiences, which include a miscarriage, which was her first experience with pregnancy, and then falling pregnant with August. There's a lot to unpack in that pregnancy journey, and then we talk through a C-section birth with August. We talk about how she felt postpartum and some rage feelings which came up and associated with sort of sleep deprivation and where that came from and how she found help for that, which I think is a really important topic to cover. And then we talk through falling pregnant with Etta and what that looked like into an elective C-section. So just a really interesting episode. I loved talking with Zazie, and I know that you're going to enjoy it because I've had so many requests for this episode. So let's jump into it. Hi, Zazie. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Kia ora. Thanks for having us.
No problem. Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Kia ora. My name is Zazie, my partner is John, and I now have two delicious children. August, who's 2.7, two years and 7 months, and Etta is 17 weeks this week.
Cool. And do you want to talk us through, I obviously found you through Instagram, so do you want to talk us through a little bit about what you share on there and, yeah, what you do for work?
Sure. I am a speech and language therapist by trade, and I started my blog Zazi Plays in lockdown, basically to keep my brain busy. I just felt like I was melding into making packed lunches and I wasn't using any of my skills. And there was actually someone else that I followed that was sharing advice for free. And I just thought, hey, I want to do that. I want to stop mums from having to worry as much as we do as mothers. As I Googled everything every 10 minutes, goodness, there's just so much to worry about. So I thought, look, I'll give my two cents. I'll offer some people some free advice and just share how I play and talk to my son to support his language development. And that's grown into an amazing community of people. And we've, you know, we've brought out our own products and stuff since then. So, yeah.
Awesome. Amazing. Very cool. And do you want to talk us through what the journey was like to pregnancy for you and John the first time around?
Sure. Well, actually, we decided that we wanted to start trying, and we were. And then we experienced a miscarriage in 2018. So that was a pretty rough start to the to the process. Yeah. We lost our little one at maybe at around 7-8 weeks, I think. I remember going to the first scan and it measuring the baby measuring smaller than I'd sort of estimated. And when I was going back and doing the maths, I was thinking, this cannot be working. That's, you know, never thought it'd add up to miscarriage. So that was a really quite a sad start. Mm-hmm. So we took a few months off, and then were delighted to find out that we were pregnant again. And I, the running joke is that I never tell John first when I find out I'm pregnant. I try and call him and he never picks up, so I tell a whole handful of other people and then he finds out last.
Yeah, awesome. And how were you feeling in that first trimester? Did you have many pregnancy symptoms in those first 12 weeks?
Yeah, for sure. I just sort of felt like I had been hit by a truck. It's like the world's worst hangover, I think.
Yeah.
And working through that was incredibly difficult. I had a new job and I was in a management position and I was supporting a lot of people. And it was, whilst I told a lot of friends, I'm really passionate about telling people about your pregnancy and not, you know, not waiting to share and enjoy that. I told a lot of friends. I hadn't really told, the workplace, and trying to hide, being super hungover, you know, having crackers in my desk drawer and wearing a lot of blusher to not look as painfully sick. But I've never really been a vomiter. I feel incredibly nauseated, but sort of not sick. Yeah. I'm lucky in that respect.
Yeah, awesome. And did you choose a midwife for your care?
Yeah, actually, it was a midwife that my colleague had. And when I was going through my miscarriage, that colleague had been incredibly supportive and had come along to appointments with me that John couldn't. Mm-hmm. And once I'd been at her house and her midwife came around, and that midwife was really supportive and kind around my miscarriage. So it just felt like I knew someone. So I reached straight out to her and she, you know, came on board straight away. And she's been my midwife for both of my littlies.
Yeah. Awesome. And how were you feeling from a mental health perspective in terms of experiencing loss in your first pregnancy and then having a pregnancy the second time? Did you feel any anxiety or, what were your feelings there?
I think I'm quite an anxious person as is. I'm quite a worrier. And I do feel like I'd had time to process my first loss. And I guess that isn't something that plagues isn't the right word, but you know, that isn't something that plays on my mind. I feel like I'd done what I needed to move on from that. So I was just left with the constant worry, every time I went to the toilet, is there going to be blood there when I wipe? Is that going to be the start of something? Nothing like the worry when you actually have your kids at the end, but you're definitely I was concerned, as you would be, that something was going to go wrong and that I was going to lose that little one. But that was throughout the pregnancy. That wasn't just in the first trimester.
And what was your pregnancy like from there? Did you sort of have symptoms subsiding in the second trimester, and did you find out the sex of your baby, and what was the rest of your pregnancy like?
I think my sickness and general inability to walk anywhere without panting and wanting to cry finished at around I want to say like 11, 12 weeks around that spot. And I sort of perked up and became a bit more human and was able to tell my colleagues and be all out in the open. And most people had realized that I was, you know, cramming my face full of crackers and not able to really participate. You know, I was arriving to meetings with food and then pretty much eating it myself so I didn't vomit on someone's face. So, everything subsided at that point. And then around the 19 week scan, I found out that I was having a little boy, but I actually managed to keep it a complete secret. Me and John knew, but we didn't tell anyone else, and we managed to use gender neutral pronouns for the rest of the pregnancy so that it was a surprise to everyone but my best friend, really.
Awesome. And did you do the other sort of standard testing that you offered in your pregnancy?
Absolutely. Anything that was offered, I guess I had. I also ended up having to have extra scans as I went along. I think that was because of I was diagnosed further along with high blood pressure. That was a funny story how that happened, actually. I went into work and I saw a bomb. My colleague came to me and said, "Zaz, there's a bomb in the hallway." And I went and there was a bomb in the hallway and everyone was evacuated and it was incredibly stressful. And then there was loads of police. Everyone came and turns out some bloke had left some electrics lying around, but it was a box with red tubes on the top with wires swirling out of it. Like it couldn't have looked more like a bomb if you'd made it in like a craft activity. And then a half hour later I had to be at the hospital and they were like, "Well, your blood pressure's through the roof." And I was like, "Well, I just saw a bomb." I'm not expecting anything else. That was around the 27 week mark, but that actually sort of started a bit of a downhill for us. I had that high blood pressure and the doctors then said, "Oh, there's a bit of protein in your urine." And then they all started to go on a bit of a panic. And they pretty much said within a couple of hours, "We're expecting that you might have your baby in a couple of days." I guess they jumped to preeclampsia and thought that they'd expected me to decline. So that was incredibly emotional for John and I. I remember, I suppose, just sitting in the ward, like sobbing. And then, you know, people came around, like people from NICU came to talk to us about having a preemie baby. And we were, I guess, mentally prepared for this outcome. And then 2 days passed and nothing changed, and then they were sort of like, "Actually, you're good, go back to work." So in terms of roller coaster, that really threw us. But it definitely made us feel incredibly lucky for every day more of the pregnancy that we had.
Awesome. And did you do any antenatal classes or birth education or anything like that going into your labor?
I did antenatal classes. They were nightly, I think, for a few weeks. I don't feel like I got a whole lot out of them, if I'm honest. I think I'm also a person a little bit in denial. I think I don't think I at any point processed the fact that I was going to have a baby. If I'm really honest, I think I'm one of those sort of like last minute people who coughs with something as I absolutely need to. And I was blanking out the rest of it. I'm also one of those people who reads everything on the entire internet. So anything that was of interest to me, I was, you know, deep Googling and felt like I was filling myself with information, but not at all really preparing for what was to come.
And did you have much of a birth plan or sort of thoughts on how you wanted your birth to go?
Not really. My overarching sort of need was that the baby came out healthy. I wasn't really bothered which way things went. I predicted that I'd probably opt for whatever meds could be thrown my way. I'm all about not feeling a whole lot of pain. Didn't want to go through a whole lot of drama to get to the winner's line. Yeah, I just said that I would go with the flow. I didn't prepare any music. I didn't have anything. It was just like, I will turn up and I'll have a baby, hopefully, and everything will be all right.
Awesome. And what about preparation for birth? Were you doing any antenatal expressing or raspberry leaf tea or any of that other stuff that Google tells you can help with your labour?
No, I wasn't. And I think that's because they said because of my high blood pressure and was it maybe my weight as well? They said maybe it was my BMI. There was a whole host of things that I was seeing an obstetrician for. Oh, I think it's because I've got this. I used to have this thing where I used to hear my heartbeat. It's called pulsatile tinnitus. Mm-hmm. It's a special type of tinnitus, and I think they were worried about that. So, and it's to do with your cerebral spinal fluid being too high or something. So I was seeing an obstetrician from quite early on, and all of those things added up. They just said, "Look, we'll induce you at 38 weeks." So there was never a reason for me to sort of be trying to bring labor along.
Yeah.
But when close to my induction, I absolutely did as much expressing as I could.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. And do you want to talk us through your labour starting? Was it spontaneous? How far along were you? And then into your birth story?
Sure. So 38 plus two, I think they asked me to come in, and that was going to be my induction day, induction evening. So I came in with John, super excited, thinking this is happening tonight, not really processing what was happening tonight, but it's happening. I think they started with either gel or tape, one of those. They started with one of those, and waiting, absolutely nothing happened, thinking, well, this is easy dose. The next morning I had some more gel and nothing happened, and then a bit later I had some tape, absolutely nothing happened. I was bouncing around on a Swiss ball, any little bit of twinge I was thinking, oh, this is the beginning, and then, you know, nothing was happening. So then they said, look, we're thinking about giving you a Foley catheter, which, for anyone who's listening who doesn't know, is like one of those long balloons that balloon artists use. It's like it's placed into your cervix, and they blow up the end of it to sort of get your cervix to start moving and doing something. So they said, we're going to put this in, and we'll take you to the delivery rooms and give you some gas and air. And by that point, I just felt like I couldn't even advocate anything for myself. You'd never heard of these things. And I was just like, oh, yeah, sure, we'll go do that. And though I've never experienced birth, that was excruciating. I think my cervix is up and to the left and round the corner somewhere, but it really took some effort for them to get there. And I was using gas and air to no avail, really. I was floating through space, but in pain. And they finally got this Foley catheter in my cervix. And one of the midwives was like, why are you shaking? And I was like, well, that was extremely, extremely painful. And I don't know if they maybe thought that was a different reaction. I don't know where my cervix was. But anyway, I didn't respond well to that at all. And I was in pain for quite some time with that Foley catheter. Yeah, waited for more hours and hours past. We watched every blooming episode of everything on Netflix. And then this woman comes, you know, you're getting checked, nothing's happening. It's meant to fall out when your cervix starts to starts to move. And this woman, the midwife came in, and she's carrying like a drip, like a bag of liquid. And I was like, fabulous, they're going to pump me through a liquid and that's going to support something. And she said, no, the obstetrician has asked that I hang this from your Foley catheter. And I was like, you what? And she proceeded to hang a bag of water from the tube that was hanging from my cervix. It was just like archaic, and I was she was like, just stand and like walk around a bit, and it was embarrassing. It was like having this big long thing hanging like down past my clothes, hanging from my cervix. Yeah, it was like some awful game show thing. And I remember just like catching eyes with a woman across the ward who was also doing the same thing, and just thinking, what is happening to us? As we're like told to walk the corridors with a swinging bag of water hanging from your, like between your legs, like by my ankles. It was just nuts. So that happened for a few more hours, and then I went to get that taken out, and the obstetrician bloke did a very thorough, intense check that was extremely painful, and then he just said, look, your cervix hasn't gone anywhere. Your options now are for us to use the words break into your cervix or have a C-section. And hearing the terms break into your cervix was enough to make anyone run. And I just said, yeah, absolutely, I'll have a C-section. By that time, it was just sort of hilarious. I was giddy. This is all stupid. And I was waiting for this baby that wasn't arriving. So I said, yep. And it was kind of like the end of a shift, and everyone was just like, we want to get this done. Like the midwives looked knackered, and it was like, right, we're going to, you know, shave you, get you ready, get you in a gown, chuck John in a gown. We didn't even have time to like grab our phones or anything. It just kind of went from a check to, we're going to take you to a ward now, to a surgical room. And they did just that. We got chucked into gear and got taken to a room somewhere upstairs. It wasn't the usual room that had all been shut, and we got taken to an OR and I got a spinal thing. spinal, yeah. What do we call it?
Spinal tap.
That's or something like that.
Yeah.
And then just went in, and my midwife arrived, and she seemed to be only there really briefly. It was just like, I'm here to see you through with this. I'd actually arranged for a birth photographer to come along, and I'd already negotiated that if it was to go to C-section, she was going to be allowed in. Mm-hmm. So she arrived, she was got into all the gowns, got all ready, and she was at the door, and they changed their minds. So she then had to wait downstairs, and August was born at I think something like 9:15 at night. And he came out just perfect, which was wonderful. His Apgar scores were wonderful, and he came out, and there was, I guess, just no concerns there. I just couldn't believe that he'd come out of my stomach somehow.
Yeah,
and yeah. I couldn't believe how it felt. Like, it's such a, I know that you've experienced a C-section before. It's such a rumbly feeling.
It is
like
rumbly.
They are all up in there. You're being sort of like wriggled and pulled and. And my doctor friend was saying that they cut you, then they stand with their hands in you and pull back to like tear your stomach up. You know, like the things that you're going through behind that curtain is quite tumultuous. There's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And so, did they place August on your chest, or what sort of happened from there?
It was really cold in there, and while I said that I wanted some skin to skin, he was taken first over to the table, to, I guess, to be checked over by a paediatrician and anyone, and John cut the cord, and I was just sort of watching from a distance. Definitely that was the time where I felt the most sort of like shocked and lonely. Yeah. Everyone was over there with the baby, and that's where I wanted everyone to be, I guess, but that I was just, you know, my rock, John, had run over to be with our new love of our lives, and I was lying on a table, literally open, and just feel like, oh my goodness, like, what? I'm on my own. And then my midwife just said, look, Zazie, it's really cold in here. We're going to wrap him up. And I got to sort of cuddle him. He was half held by me, half held by John, sort of on my chest and around. And my midwife helped me to latch him, because we've shown lots of interest in breastfeeding. But I guess at the time, my anatomy, I've got big boobs, plus lying on my back, plus not having never done that before, just wasn't going well. So I thankfully had that expressed breast milk, and which we John gave him in a syringe, and my midwife was helping me express while I was lying there. So you know, those hands on my boobs at all times, sort of trying to get more milk out during recovery and stuff. And I just remember feeling just in complete shock, and your legs are totally numb, and then one leg comes back quicker than the other, and you think that you're then paralyzed down one side. You know, there's a lot of worry, plus there's suddenly a new life that you've got to care for.
And did John stay with you in the hospital?
He did. I was incredibly lucky the first time around to be put in a separate room, which meant that he could stay. In the first instance, they didn't. They pushed me onto a ward, and my photographer was there to take some pictures. But it was just like, it was late at night. It was awkward. And thankfully, someone said, there's a room spare, and we'll put her down here. So I was placed in a room, and that first hour, we had a photographer there to capture those moments. And that was amazing. Yeah. With some fabulous pictures, and John was able to stay with me, so I ended up staying, I think it was around 4 nights that I ended up staying, maybe 5, just while they monitored my blood pressure and kept an eye on me. And then August ended up quite jaundiced as well, so there was always another reason why I needed to sort of stay another night. But thankfully he stayed with me on an uncomfortable little chair. But I could, you know, I really couldn't have done it without him that first time. I think when you first cut open and all those muscles are severed, I just had nothing in me. I was in agony. I was taking every drug that I was offered, and I was asking for them. I couldn't sit up, I couldn't lie down, I couldn't move. You know, getting to the toilet or to look after myself at all was excruciating. So John did basically all cares for little August, and I just was the breastfeeding, sleeping sort of machine.
And how did you feel going home from the hospital? Obviously, you've had a huge surgery. You've got a new baby. It's just, like life-changing, totally life-changing experience. So how did you feel once you got home? And, do you want to talk us through those first days and weeks at home with August?
Well, when I first got home, I had my mum, I don't know why I said mum, my mum and my dad were there for the first day and a half, and then they flew home. So at first it just felt like there was a lot happening. There was a lot in my house and there was a lot of other hands for the baby, and I was just sort of sleeping whenever I could. And then it was sort of nice when they left and it was just John and I, and we could sort of get into a rhythm. Mm. For some reason, we ended up sleeping in the spare room. None of us can remember why we ended up doing that, but we were sleeping in a different room, the wrong way around in the bed, so that our heads could be closer to the bassinet that we'd squeezed in there. It was just, everything was just a bit odd, and we were just really, I was highly, highly anxious. I definitely would have said that I had postpartum depression / anxiety. I was worried about every damn breath that August was taking, and I just felt like I never really got a solid night's sleep those first few weeks, because every second I was like, well, are you breathing? Are you still here? Are you still, you know, what's going on for you? So definitely high worry. But John had 2 weeks off, which was a joy, and then he went back to work, and it just sort of felt like August and I had been left to conquer the world on our own. It was, I loved it, actually. We'd wake up and listen to the Beatles every morning and just you know, plod through the days. I just felt like I'd been waiting all my life to have that time and to do that. That I'd been made to do that. Really.
Yeah. And when you talk about that sort of depression or anxiety type feeling, did that only last a couple of weeks, or did you feel like that sort of continued throughout your postpartum period? Or what happened there?
I think that would have lasted throughout. Definitely, the anxiety around him breathing or just existing would have subsided quite soon, and I actually did have one of those heart rate monitors that goes on the kid's foot, so that's for me that reduced so much anxiety, because it was like an app is telling me that he's breathing, and I've made it all technical and I'm good now. But I don't think I would have acknowledged it until way later, or maybe it's even the second pregnancy, but I was experiencing a lot of postpartum stress. I was feeling really anxious when things weren't going right, especially around sleep. I was feeling lots of sort of like rushes of anger that I had no control over, that were like all consuming. And thankfully, I've got a wonderful partner and we're really good at communicating. So it became a bit of a joke. I was like, I am raging with anger with you right now for no reason, John. You've done absolutely nothing wrong, but let me tell you, this is what I'm feeling. I did get some support for that postpartum. Maybe it's about a year and a couple of months postpartum. I ended up seeing someone, and I went to see a psychologist for a while, which was really supportive, and she helped pick apart why that had sort of come up for me. And I'm really privileged to have had that bit of support.
For sure. And is there anything else in terms of like your physical recovery that was of note, or how did you find your C-section recovery went from birth?
It almost felt like I'd been sewn up incorrectly, and I know I wouldn't have been, but I don't think anyone told me either. You don't really plan for a C-section, do you? No one tells you. So I hadn't have any information. And if someone did tell me something postpartum, your brain's a sieve at that point. So I don't feel like anyone ever said to sort of stand up straight or to use whatever back muscles or anything. So I was genuinely walking bent over like a 90-year-old for the first like 2 weeks. It felt like I couldn't stand up straight. And I definitely begged for them to give me some medication for home. I don't know how people go home with paracetamol. I really do not.
Me neither.
I think that slowly just sort of subsided, the love of August and the need to have to pick him up and move him and do everything. You just sort of have to get on with it. And that subsided. And then there was a little bit of a question of whether my wound had opened a little bit, but that sort of went away. It's in an awkward place.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That cut. And if you're any sort of bigger plus size woman, my cut was like under the leftover pregnancy fat and everything. Mm. And you've got to keep that area dry. And I for a while still got like phantom pains, I guess. I think I still get them, like phantom sort of like stabbing pains in that wound, and it's an incredibly numb area. I was recently told by a woman's health physio to, you meant to massage it, you meant to intensely massage it, and I had no idea. And do I do it? Nope, I should, but I don't.
Yeah. And how did you sort of, or did you and John share responsibilities as a couple when John went back to work, or what did that look like?
Oh, I'm so lucky. John's amazing. So it just sort of went that we did everything together. We were pretty much doing all night wakings together as well. Like, I'd wake up and do the feeding part, but then he would wake up to do any sort of nappy changing and re-swaddling and the putting down part. So it always felt like a sort of team sport, and that definitely reduced my, you know, staring dagger eyes at him when he was sleeping. You know, it just felt like there was we were doing this together. You know, he did a lot of the cooking and the organizing, and the, you know, he's just a way more organized person in general than I am. So he was holding us together, holding the fort together, and sharing the load wherever physically possible, really.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. And we obviously know that you have little Etta. So do you want to talk us through falling pregnant with her and, how you found out and what that was like?
Yeah, I had to wait that sort of year that they recommend after having your first via C-section. So I waited a year, and then I wanted to wait a little bit longer while I got re-established in my job and didn't want to just run away again to have another baby. And then once we decided that we were going to try, I think we decided in like October 2020, and then we were we fell pregnant in the January 2021. I was just absolutely ecstatic. I already sort of knew what to feel and what sort of the early pregnancy signs were for me, so as soon as, you know, that happened, I was just over the moon. And I had a but I'd been testing a lot. You know, when you're trying, you're testing and you're worried. Every cycle, you're like, right, I'll just do this test. Oh, I won't waste another pregnancy test. Oh, but I will at like 2 a.m. because I'm desperate to know what's happening. So I think I'd been ovulation testing, and I went into the bathroom and I was like, I should do an ovulation test, which I did. But then I was like, oh, I just want to do this other test, this posh pregnancy test that my friend had given me because she's done with having babies, and it was one of those posh digital ones. And in my head I was like, Zaz, you're wasting this blooming test, but you just can't physically stop yourself. And then the ovulation test came back like glaringly 2 lines, and then the other one said pregnant plus, and I just burst out crying and ran into John and scared the living crap out of him. It's like, what's wrong with Zaz? But we were so excited.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. And what was that first trimester like? Was it much different to August pregnancy?
No, it was very much the same. No vomiting, feeling like I wanted to vomit every second. Mm. Incredibly tired, you know, couldn't walk more than a few meters without feeling miserable about it. It just heightened, though, because then you've got a little toddler running around. And it's just, you come home and you're looking at your toddler and you're thinking, please sit still, like, please don't move, because I don't have the capacity to run around after you. So it's definitely for me it was more trying the second time around.
For sure. I can definitely relate to that. And you said that you had the same midwife for your care.
Yeah, I straight away got in contact with her and said what I wanted. I did feel a little bit guilty around that, because I knew going into the pregnancy with Etta that I wanted a C-section the second time around. I knew that I'd be offered one and it'd be put on the table, and I knew that I wanted to take it, which is quite controversial, really. And I think there's something, I don't know for sure, but I think there's something in the midwife world where they don't get paid as much as a community midwife if you're going to have a C-section. So I almost went into it with guilt, which I think is a feeling that we shouldn't be having.
I think you're right. I think if you're having an elective C-section, the pay structure is slightly different, which is just bizarre, right? Anyway, we won't go into the midwifery pay thing, but... I'm really keen for you to talk us through your mindset around having an elective cesarean, because I've got lots of mums who message me in the position of deciding whether they should have an elective or try for a vaginal birth. So I would love to hear a bit more about, where your thoughts were at and how you landed at your decision.
Sure. Well, I think I sort of stray away from this notion that everything should be au naturel. I get the feeling as a foreigner, you know, I'm from the UK as a foreigner. Mm. The feeling that I felt here as an adult was that there was lots of pressure on mums to be super au naturel and to do everything without any sort of pain medication and stuff. And my view is that you do what you can, and the joy is getting your child at the end of it. It's not sure. Getting through an extreme amount of pain. I mean, for what, you know? I'm a mad feminist, you know. I just feel like if a man was giving birth, chuck everything at him. He'd have absolutely everything. He'd have 2 weeks in hospital. Someone would be looking after his child, you know. It would never be. Oh, he's going to do this without any medication. He's in. Like, Johnny's going to push through. Like, it just wouldn't. I always stray away from that, basically. I do what I feel like I'm going to need. And when I went in to meet my obstetrician the second time round, this lovely young bloke, he just sort of said, what are you considering? And I said, look, at the minute I'm thinking C-section, but I could be talked out of it. You know, talk me through the statistics and talk me through what I might expect. And he did, and he heard out what I had to say. And I just said, well, look, this was my experience the first time round, being induced. I had a lot of painful sort of invasive checks that might not be painful for other women, but were extremely painful for me. This was the, you know, the Foley catheter situation. None of it worked. And no one really told me why none of my induction worked. I think maybe the cord was wrapped around August a couple of times and he's held up off my cervix, so nothing was kind of triggering it. But I said, look, at the end of it, a little boy came out with perfect Apgar scores. My C-section was, whilst classed as emergency, was chill as, you know, I'd got to chat to everyone. It was lovely. I said, that's the sort of birth that I want to go for again. I like the idea of, given that I've got high blood pressure and these are the complications that were going on, I'd like to walk in, not anxious, anxious, but not as anxious as I could be, and know that my baby's going to be cut out and handed to me in a good space, as opposed to me trying and maybe something going wrong and me having to be rushed there. And I think I was surrounded by, you know, I've got two colleagues who were in the same, had just done the same, had their second C-sections. And also I'd had two cousins my age who'd gone for natural births with their first and had ended up with, you know, traumatic emergency C-sections. So, you know, when I was looking at examples of what happened to my nearest and dearest, sort of C-sections was what was going. And I've mentioned this on my blog before, and I got like some women responding with like sad faces or teary eyes. Like I'd let myself down, let my baby down, or like the system had let me down by not talking through what I could have. I should have gone with a natural birth, but you know, the baby is the winning part. You know, not how they come into this world. So I don't feel like I did anything wrong, and I support women to just make whatever choice is going to make them feel most comfortable.
For sure. I think I couldn't agree with you more there, in terms of the sense that your best birth is whatever that feels like to you, right? It's not it's not society's decision to make for you. It is absolutely your own personal preference. And I have experienced a really sort of similar thing, I guess, in the way that my birth with Ali was a vaginal birth, but I had, you know, different interventions and still feel really positively about that experience. But other people don't feel positive for my experience. And I just think, there's a lot of interesting pressures in the birthing world, but
people say funny things as well. I remember having my baby a week after a friend, and her husband was like, oh, you're so lucky, you didn't even have to, as if I hadn't done anything, you didn't even have to push. I was like, have you seen a woman recover from intensive abdominal surgery? Like, what do you mean I didn't have to go through anything? Like the people just, you know, think that that whole notion, you're too posh to push, you're just lying there, and then you're hunky-dory afterwards. Like, you've had seven layers of your insides dug into and torn into, you know, you're not human at the end of it. So we need to change the narrative around C-sections for sure.
I definitely agree with that. And in terms of preparation for your elective C-section, was there anything that you did to prepare for that, and what were your plans with August for that time?
I arranged for my mum to come down. So I was given a date to the 16th of September, and I arranged for my mum to come down from Christchurch, which is where she lives, to come and look after him. And again, it was in complete denial, even though I knew what I was walking into. I definitely thought the date was going to be changed just because September's a busy baby time, isn't it? Everyone's had sex around Christmas. So I just thought that, you know, my C-section would be bumped off the list, but it really wasn't. So I think we thought about putting some music together, then never did it. And I just knew the second time around what I was going into. I felt like I could be more informed about what was happening to me. I knew that I wanted to, I did ask if they did any of that, what they do in Australia, where they're like, they have like a see-through cloth. So you can see it happening. That was a hard no. I asked if I could do that assisted gentle C-section where you pull the baby out yourself. They looked at me like I was a psychopath. That was a hard no. So I was just sort of resigned to, yeah, sure, whatever, just, you know, just get her out whichever which way. But coming up to the end of the pregnancy with Etta, I should have googled this before talking to you, but whatever that thing is where your cervix feels like it's cracked and completely broken.
Ah, okay.
Not cervix, your pelvic something
pain?
Or other. It's something like that, but like the extreme version. So it started one day, and then by the next day I genuinely couldn't walk, and a friend came around and dropped off crutches, and it's just pain like I've never experienced. It was just it was just nuts. I couldn't walk. I remember going to the warehouse once and thinking, I don't think I'll get it out of here. Like, how will I physically, will someone have to bring me a wheelchair to put me in and then push me? It was just it just feels like someone's torn your pelvis apart and all the muscles are broken. So coming up to the end of that pregnancy, I was my blood pressure had really spiked. I had to leave work sort of imminently. I'd gone for a check that morning, thinking I'll toddle back to work afterwards, and the doctor was like, no, I'm admitting you to monitor your blood pressure now. And I actually never went back to work after that point. It was just a couple of days before that second big lockdown in August, so I wasn't really missed because, you know, everything went tits up anyway. But my health had sort of declined a lot. So on top of that pelvis thing, my blood pressure was all over the shop, and I was constantly being hospitalized because I was asked to get checked at home. And even though I was on medication, it sort of wasn't working. And I felt at that point like that was a really stressful time, actually, because I didn't quite understand, no matter how much I Googled, what my blood pressure meant or what that meant for my health and the health of my baby. And I was getting conflicting messages left, right and center. My obstetrician said nothing over the bottom number being 100. And then when I'd walk in, because it was over 100, another doctor would be like, oh, well, we'd say 105. And then another doctor was like, oh, you're fine. One doctor said, you're a smart woman, you should just self-medicate some more of your blood pressure meds if you feel like it. And I was like, I'm not that smart. I'm not a doctor. I have no idea what's happening here. I think the last month of my pregnancy was really tumultuous and really anxiety inducing, because I just sort of felt that my body was working against me, and I could, no one could get my blood pressure under control.
No, I can understand that. And so do you want to talk us through when you sort of got closer to your elective date, and what's going through your head before the surgery and before meeting your new little baby?
Yeah, I was, I guess, just incredibly excited and in complete denial, again, that anything was going to happen to me. I went in that morning, and I was lucky enough that not only was my midwife there for me, but my colleague's wife is a newly trained midwife. So it was sort of like having a really close friend in there. She's like the ultimate earth mother who had her five children at home in the lounge, you know, like that sort of woman, and incredibly caring. So she was there as well. So it was kind of like I had a bestie in there with me who was calm and supportive. And again, I thought they were going to push out my C-section. So then when they said, we're wheeling you into the room now, and John was desperately trying to make a playlist, like, we just, neither of us are like in the space. Like, it was like, as if it was, the whole thing was a shock. So we went in, and the music didn't even work in the end. But they actually struggled that this time around to give me the spinal. they struggle to find it. And in that midst, I like passed out. I just heard them saying, oh, something's dropping. And I felt like I was fainting and I had to lie on a bed for a little bit. Mm-hmm. But everyone was incredibly kind. I was mortified. I was like, just sit me back up. It'll be fine. But at that point, they'd made John sit in the corner. They were like, you sit down there while we do everything. Mm-hmm. And then again, it's really hard to advocate for yourself, but I sat back up after, you know, my woozy moment. And I was like, I need John to be in front of me. Actually, I don't need a, you know, I know you want an anaesthetist here holding my hand, but I need John here. He is my rock. So everyone just sort of was like, yes, get John over here. And then I was like, I need you to talk about August. So John got out of his phone and was showing me pictures of August to keep my mind off everything. But then I had my friend midwife and my other midwife. Everyone was waxing lyrical about August to the point where it was like overwhelming. And I was trying not to laugh because they were like, look at his beautiful face. Look how gorgeous it is, like, right up in my grill. But you know, that's what it took for me to not pass out a second time.
Yeah. And do you want to talk us through the rest of that experience and Etta being born?
They wheeled me into the beautiful new glowing bright room that's the new OR in Dunedin, and I get quite a lot of medical based anxiety. I think my anxiety always stems back to like medical or my body not feeling okay. And I knew what to expect this time round. So the first time round, I remember like whispering to John and then to anaesthetist, and I said, oh, I'm sorry, but could you just like push my feet back? Because it feels like they're going to cramp. And like all the anaesthetists laughed and they were like, oh, your body feels however it felt when the bottom half fell asleep. So if your feet were pointing slightly forward and you were just about to go into cramp, that's what it'll feel like for the rest of it. So that first one, I felt like I was cramping the entire time, but it wasn't. And they were like, your feet are upright normally. So the second time around, I was like, someone hold my feet up in the upright position. And I knew to ask John to like, I guess, have his hands on my shoulders or head, so just so I was getting some tactile feedback, because you can't feel your bottom half and that's really disorientating. So I asked for that, and I had asked for skin on skin as soon as possible, which I think I got a little bit of, but again it was quite cold in there. So then anaesthetist said, we'll let you know when we start. But then he didn't. So I just thought they were all getting ready. And then they were like, you've got 1 minute until your baby's here. And I must have just been on another planet, just in complete denial. I was like, you what? You've started the surgery? And they're like, yeah, we're 10 minutes deep. Where have you been? I just said, John, there's my rock talking to me. And I asked that the anaesthetist talk me through it. So every now and again, I had them like telling me what stage that I was at, or my midwife doing that. And I'd ask my midwife and any student midwife to take as many pictures as possible. So thankfully they were doing that for me as well. And then one of the midwives actually captured my face when Etta came out, which was just in complete and utter disbelief that was my child. And I think I was just lying there saying, is she mine? Like, that doesn't feel or look like my baby. And she was taken away. But again, she came out absolutely perfectly with glowing Apgar scores and was really healthy, and as was I. And she latched straight away, which was fantastic. She was desperately searching for milk from the second she came out, and we gave her a syringe of milk and that wasn't enough, and my friend who's the midwife just brought her over and just sort of like plonked her on my breast and she was latched, and I was like, God, what is this magic? So it still felt like I got those first experiences like straight off the bat, even though, you know, I was lying on a table.
Yeah, awesome. And how did you go in recovery this time? Did John stay with you, or what happened from there when you got back to your room?
It was COVID-y times, so unfortunately, I think we were at level 2, which meant that partners weren't allowed to stay if you were on a ward. I was placed in a ward with 4 beds, but I wasn't the only one in there, but still there was the expectation that he couldn't be there. But because I had Etta first thing on the morning, it meant I had the entire day with him to, you know, support me through those first few hours, and they were quite flexible. You're meant to leave at 8 o'clock, but I think he left closer to 10 or 11. And I definitely felt a lot different the second time around. It felt like I could just do everything. The first time around, I was, you know, incapacitated. I couldn't move. But with Etta, I wonder if, you know, your body's already had those muscles severed and it's compensated. So the second time around, my body was like, oh, yeah, you can actually do this. And I felt that I was able to get up in the night and I was able to sort of change nappies and stuff with a lot of help from the midwives. There was one that first night, my catheter bag exploded and I was covered in my own wee, and Etta had vomited all over my phone was talking there. So I was covered in wee, the baby had vomited, Etta had also pooed a nappy. I couldn't walk, I needed help to shower, I needed help to get back. And then when we were all cleaning up the bed and everything, there was a tub of water that we both knocked onto the floor, floor was flooded. It was just, but you know, the team at the hospital were just wonderful, and it was all a good laugh and a good joke. So I definitely felt more human the second time around. Also, you know what to ask for. I actually suffer from Raynaud's in my nipples, if you've heard of that. It's where the like your blood vessels just don't work, and I only get that when I'm pregnant or when I've had a baby. So that first time around, I really, really struggled with breastfeeding, and no one heard me. And I knew I had Raynaud's, and I remember John I said, can you go get the lactation consultant the first time around? And John wandered off, and he came back and she said to me, she won't have Raynaud's, it'll just be a bad latch. And I was like, oh my God, this woman hasn't even met me. And she's diagnosed me from a different room to my partner. You know, like, I do have Raynaud's. There's a blood pressure medication that you can be put on specifically that stops that happening. So the second time around, you know, I could advocate for myself that that's exactly what I wanted, so that I wasn't suffering with you know, not just the general chapped nipple situation that we go through when we try and breastfeed. It's that, but on steroids. It's like you know, razor blades to your nipples that don't have any blood going to them. Yeah, I just felt like I could advocate for that. I knew how to breastfeed the second time around, and that just sort of came more quickly and naturally. I knew to ask for the lactation consultant to get a check. I knew what I could ask for, medication wise. You know, the second time around, you know what's happening to you and what to expect, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And how did you feel going home this time around, and did you have a plan in terms of introducing August Etta, and what did that all look like the second time?
I spent, I think it was 2 to 3 nights in hospital this time, because again with my blood pressure they needed to check that I wasn't going to get sort of postpartum preeclampsia. And August did come and visit me in the hospital, and my mum brought him in. Level two, the rules were a bit sort of wobbly there, but he managed to come in a little bit. And the idea was this, that we were going to have as little pressure as possible. So he was quite overwhelmed when he came in, and he really is obsessed with bins. So we just found all the bins in the ward and we allowed him to do that. He was just, you know, had his hands or head in a bin, and his newborn sister was of no real interest. Or he looked at her a little bit, I think. So he managed to, you know, come in twice and get and see her. We'd been talking for a long time, you know, since conception about, we'd already named her from, you know, pretty much the first couple of weeks that, you know, Etta was coming, baby Etta is coming. So we just knew that we didn't want to put any pressure on him, that he must love, cuddle, be with his sister, because it's such a huge change for a toddler. So we just took it really slow. We had those few visits in hospital, and then at home it was, you know, if you want to come over and see her, you can. But we did our best to split our time. You know, it was me who's obviously having to be more hands-on with Etta to do all the breastfeeding and things. And John would, you know, take August on little adventures and excursions to keep him busy and occupied and make him feel like, you know, he hadn't been dumped.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. And how did you find your mental health this time around? Did you experience the same type of anxious feelings? What was that like?
Definitely not as intense as it was with August in terms of feeling anxious about whether she's alive and breathing. I think, again, you just know what to do. You've done it before when you've had a baby. So I knew what I was looking for. I'm really quite a schedule-y person. So, you know, whilst following her cues of, you know, extra feeds and whatever, I felt like I knew what sort of routine that I could get ourselves into that makes me feel more confident as well. And when I know that I know what's sort of going on with her. So we got into a routine pretty swiftly. And I definitely feel, I mean, I'm only 4 months postpartum, so I'm definitely not out of any sort of woods yet. I definitely feel a level of anxiety and a level of sort of stress on top of that. You know, I just moved house, so there's a lot on my plate, but that postpartum rage absolutely has come back for me, and it was quite alarming because I'd forgotten what it felt like. And then when it started happening again, I was like, John, this blooming thing's coming back, like I'm angry with you. But no, again, it's for no reason whatsoever. So I guess I'm just working through that at the minute, and I have a doctor's appointment next week, so I do intend to bring that up with her. And I talk to anyone who wants to talk about it with them, because again, mental health is such a taboo subject, but even more so for mothers who are meant to look like they're coping and glamorous, and it's all got, you know, we've got it all sorted. And I think, you know, being really open about the fact that actually you're going to feel a bit crazy after having a baby, most of what people are feeling is actually postpartum depression, but even there's a taboo in admitting that. No, I'm definitely not 100% myself presently, and I've acknowledged that, and I'm just going to sort of ride it out and get the help that I need.
Awesome, thank you for talking about that. I think yeah, it's just really important that we try to normalize these types of things, because you're right, everybody experiences postpartum differently. And I think I can relate to your story a lot in the sense of that sort of feeling of rage and anxiety I definitely had with Jai and didn't even know when I was in it. I think it's really hard to be actually aware of anything being different within you when it really is. So yeah, I think it's really important that we talk about that.
Yeah, you just don't know what's normal, do you? So you just think, well, is that this is probably a natural reaction to being sleep deprived and having a baby. But, you know, there's it's a spectrum, and it's, you know, it's not, you know, your brain's hormones are thrown, and you probably need help to get them back to where they were. When I saw a psychologist, she was saying, you know, your childhood trauma, like things that came up for you when you were little and how you were parented, you know, come back to hit you in the face when then you're trying to be a parent. So I think we need to cut women some slack and look after them as much as possible.
100%. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Zazi, for coming on the podcast and sharing your stories with us. I've really enjoyed talking to you today, and I know that there's lots of people out there who will really love listening to your story. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it. And if you're listening to this around the time that it comes out, make sure you check the Kiwi Birth Tales Instagram for a really awesome giveaway with our amazing sponsor from this week, Edwards & Co. I just absolutely love all of their products and cannot recommend them more. So super grateful that the team from Edwards & Co. sponsored this week's episode. Thanks, team.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.